This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, it's a different Waddle and Sylvie show than you're used to, but I think it's an important conversation. We all do. And I think it's an important time to listen. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give everybody who calls in
the forum.
The forum and sort of the more space and like, hey, when you just call in about the Bears, you know what I mean? Make your point and get out. Like, this is it's a complex issue. We're giving people more time, more nuance. 312-332-3776. Michael Wilbon is going to join us. Obviously, he grew up here. He's from here. He loves Chicago. He has dealt with a lot being in D.C. and always has lots of great thoughts.
He'll have Michael a good Wilbon. Voice on this.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. 1 hour from right now. Will Jones does reporting for ABC 7. I believe Will is from your hometown, Waddle, of Cincinnati, Ohio. And he went to Northwestern.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah. And he covered and got to see in person a lot of what went on in this city. And we wanted to touch base with one of the great reporters from ABC 7. And Will joins Waddle and Sylvie right now. Hi, Will. How you feeling?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for having me. And Cincinnati is a great city. Chicago is a great city as well.
Amen to that, Will. How would you describe what you've experienced over the last several hours, days, whatever the time period may be?
So Saturday night, I was downtown covering the looting that was happening at those businesses. It was really chaotic. It was so surprising, you know, being live on the air and trying to process and articulate what you're seeing. It was a challenge just to see all of the activity. So many officers downtown. You had so many looters. There were looters and there were demonstrators, so it's important to separate the two. And the looters, they were so bold, breaking windows, going inside, some with shopping bags, pulling their cars around, and they're loading up. And they were really taking their time, so it was kind of hard to understand what I was seeing. I was seeing people stealing merchandise right in front of officers, and they were just taking their time like they were not committing any type of crime. So that was one of the most surprising things for me.
Well, obviously, as a reporter, your job is to be unbiased. But you are a black man. You are on the National Association of Black Journalists here in Chicago. How did you feel emotionally about everything?
That was really tough. I recognize the responsibility and with the platform that I have to make sure that I'm sharing diverse voices, sharing diverse stories. So it's hard to kind of be the reporter and also separate myself from, you know, the black experience. And I ultimately decided just to do both. I have this platform and I can try to communicate what I'm hearing from people in the community who look like me and also describe what was going on. So I tried to take that approach. And I tried not to make judgments, but I tried to use my platform just to encourage discussion and encourage people to think about what they're seeing in different kind of ways.
Well, I would ask you, I mean, as you said, it's easily distinguishable, the peaceful protesters versus those that are out there to destroy property, steal things, and hurt other folks. What feelings are you experiencing when you see this vast difference between the purposes of different groups?
Well, there is this important message out there of police misconduct. The whole country, no matter your race, no matter your ideology, your political affiliations, it seems like everyone has been outraged by the George Floyd video, what they saw, that cell phone video of what unfolded there. So with those demonstrators, it was encouraging as I was driving downtown. I worked the late afternoon night shift at ABC 7 on the weekend. So I was coming downtown and seeing families of all different races, young kids holding signs. And I was thinking, wow, this is really a unifying moment. And throughout the day, I saw, you know, diverse demonstrators and also saw diverse looters. And it was kind of unfortunate that the looting has become, you know, a distraction from the most important issue, police misconduct. And it was just troubling to see people come downtown and just loot. And yesterday I was so surprised. I was near Chicago Police Headquarters, and two blocks away, people were looting. And officers were stationed around CPD headquarters because they were concerned about if their building was going to be set on fire, like what happened in Minneapolis. So they were prepared for that. And I heard one person, as he was jumping in the car, they had spent about 10 minutes inside of a store there near the police headquarters. He said, all right, on to the next place. Mm. And wow. I don't know if those people realize that they're distracting. They're serving as a distraction from an important cause that really has unified the country.
Will,
so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, for sure. People want to know, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see another time like this with a pandemic, with rioting and looting and what's gone on. It's like it's the perfect storm. What are you expecting? What are police expecting here in the next day or two over in the city?
I heard from one officer yesterday that he was hoping for rain. Rain would stop people or stop large crowds from coming out and looting. They want this all to be over. And you mentioned that we are in the middle of a pandemic. And I had to remind myself to put on my mask when I was interviewing people, because that danger is still present. But it seemed like COVID-19, the pandemic, took a backseat over the weekend and currently to what was happening. So officers are concerned. They want to get home to their families. Another officer told me that they're concerned when they are called to these locations. When they're called, dozens of them show up, and they're stationed around buildings trying to protect property, and they're worried that someone may open fire on them or someone may try to drive through them. So they have a lot of concerns as well. They just want it to be over, like so many people in this city. I went for a jog in my neighborhood this morning, and it was so strange seeing people board up their businesses. Some of the businesses I was driving home last night, they were being looted. I got caught in a traffic jam trying to get home last night of people going into a sports clothing store. And it was just so many people around. It was just so surprising. I keep using the word surprising because there's no better way to put it.
Well, two questions for you. First of all, when you're witnessing the rioting and the looting firsthand, does it seem like it's organized or it's just everyone for themselves? Or do you see some organization there? And second of all, do you know what the protocol is for the police officers when this is taking place, what they're supposed to be doing? You can't defend every store, but when the looting takes place and the private property damage begins, what is their protocol?
There is a criminal enterprise operating. Officers tell me that some of them are, the looters are listening to police traffic and trying to figure out where to go. So people, I compared it to Black Friday yesterday. People, you know, make a list of the stores that they're going to hit to get the best bargains. That's how it's working. Of course, there are some people who are just taking advantage of it when they see the opportunity. I saw one woman, she lived near a beauty supply store. It had been looted. There weren't police around, so she went in and then picked up supplies and walked to her house nearby. So some of it is just opportunity. As for police, it was so interesting just seeing them stand by as this looting was unfolding. And I asked them, well, why aren't you doing anything? Have you been told not to? And the officer told me that right now the important thing is protecting life instead of protecting property. So if these officers try to arrest these looters going inside these businesses, they're worried that the situation will escalate and there could be a loss of life. And then there could be video of police trying to take someone into custody. And then that sparks more outrage in the community. So it's a fine line that they're trying not to cross.
Will, have you been worried for your safety at all covering these?
So I was on edge a lot of the time when I was reporting, because when you're covering these situations, you just never know what's going to happen. I can tell you, though, the looters and the demonstrators, they were kind to me. They As long as you stayed out of their way, they were fine. So I didn't feel like my life was in danger, but I was worried that, you know, it could change if a rush of people tried to, you know, run in my direction. So my team, the crew that I worked with, we had a strategy that we just stayed away from the crowd and a safe distance. So if something happened, that we would have a way to get out of the situation.
Will, the destruction of property and the looting, I believe, has it has grown from the city to outlying areas in Chicago. What can you tell us about different areas that have also been having to deal with this?
They've gone to suburban malls, suburban strip malls, suburban big box stores. In Aurora, the mayor there had a news conference there talking about the destruction. And I believe there is a curfew in that city, and other suburban cities are instituting curfews because people have cars. And once they clear out of a location in the city, they head to other locations in the suburbs. So it's a tough situation for a lot of communities, even outside of Chicago. But the devastation in Chicago, I spent most of the day yesterday on the south side, and just every few blocks, I would see damage, broken windows, with stores that have been looted. So it's just, and I wonder, how are these communities going to recover? What about the senior citizen who relies on her neighborhood stores because she doesn't have access to a car? Where is she going to get her groceries now?
Well, and these local businesses have also been so devastated by the coronavirus and the inability for them to function in a normal way. I mean, I would think this is just, I mean, an even more devastating blow.
That's exactly correct. June 3rd, supposed to open up the city. Businesses are allowed to reopen after being closed for 2+ months. And now some of them can't even open, and a lot of them were struggling to get to this point. They're on the edge of closing up for good, and now with the activity going on, they may not be able to reopen. So I'm sure some businesses have already closed because of the coronavirus. Others will close because of the coronavirus, plus what's happened over the weekend and what could possibly happen again tonight.
Will, we really appreciate the time. Hopefully our next conversation is better circumstances. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. There's Will Jones from ABC 7. He was covering everything. Waddle, we do have some news. I got to get to that. But believe me, we're getting to your calls. Yeah. We'll share the news because it does have to do with good news involving some baseball. And it's pretty big. We'll get to that coming up next. All of your phone calls as well. Waddle and Sylvie with important discussions.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Waddle and I talking about what's going on in the country. We are a sports show, and there is sports news. So we want to keep you up to date on that, and then we'll get to your calls at 312-332-3776. Jeff Passan, Waddle, with a very important couple of tweets. Listen to this. If you didn't know, the MLBPA came out with a counteroffer yesterday, upping the amount of games in the 100s. Like
114.
From 114.
I believe is what it was.
So this is what Passan tweeted 7 minutes ago, and he was just on SportsCenter. Says Major League Baseball intends to propose a shorter season in which they would pay players a full prorated share of their salary, sources told ESPN. The league believes the late March agreement allows it to set the schedule and that this would fulfill the players' prorated desire. He adds, the potential season for Major League Baseball envisions would run somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 regular season games, sources told ESPN. The exact number is being considered, but the aim would be to return in July. It would be less than half of the players' proposed season length.
So to me, this basically is their response that says, okay, you want your full prorated salaries, you'll get 50 games worth. instead of what was they were projecting it to be, what, an 80-game season prior to the 114 offered by the players.
The owner only wants to pay the players a certain amount.
And
by playing less games,
it doesn't
hurt them because there's a season and they're not profiting because there's no gate.
Correct. And then you can also profit from whatever the postseason tournament will look like.
But again, is this like in the commissioner's job is also supposed to be what's in the best interest to baseball.
Yeah.
If you can play more games, is this the best interest for baseball?
It's a great question. I mean, I think they set the number, as you said, for financial reasons. And look, they need a little good publicity at this point, especially after team after team is deciding not to pay their minor leaguers.
Right. And then look, we were just dealing with COVID last week. Now we're dealing with a whole bigger issue in this country. So we have all week to talk about that, but it looks like there's progress. We'll see how the players respond because they will get less, but they will be getting paid for what they do.
Yeah.
So we'll see how far this thing goes, and we'll keep you updated. Lance in Miami has been very patient. Lance, we appreciate your patience. Welcome to Waddle and Sylvie.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
We're okay.
All right. So, look, I've been gnawing at myself, man, for the last 24 hours, man. It's hard to get up in the morning time and get to work and try to put things that are going on outside of your door, man, in the back of your mind. But like I told the gentleman that took the call earlier, here's the thing. I've got an 11-year-old son, and I'm fortunate, man, in my career from a financial standpoint to be able to work inside the NFL and all those good things. But there's a lot of other cats out there on the street right now that are not. My son, he has come to me at least three times and literally asked me, why are they killing us? And I honestly can't even answer his question. And I bring up something that Hayward said a few minutes ago. My dad was the same exact way. I'm 43 years old. My dad told me, hey, look, you get pulled over, watch what you say, watch how you act, don't get smart, be respectful, and live for another day. My dad grew up in Natchez, Mississippi. My mom grew up in Natchez, Mississippi. My mom worked for the Department of Health there in Chicago for 30 years. It was at that point where I learned how to, conduct myself, be professional, and keep your manners at all times. And that's a word right there that's stressed in black households all the time, your manners all the time. Something that you guys don't probably have to deal with. Now, here's the thing. Every time I'm with my son in particular, and I'm around, individuals that are not, African-American, we tend to, I call it kind of like the tongue in the cheek, as my wife likes to say. You always hear this. Oh, they're very well-mannered, or they speak so properly, or they carry themselves so well. And it's kind of like, I think that where we are today in society, I think even the individuals that don't really mean anything by it, they don't really understand how that can kind of almost come off as a dig. And it's like the perception of black men in the country. It's so horrid, to be honest with you. It's bad. And it's like, I look at my son, I went to bed probably about 2 o'clock this morning. And I quiet myself to sleep, man, like a little kid.
It's a patronizing comment to you because you would never say to your white friend's parents that your son is so very well spoken or your daughter is very well mannered. It's a patronizing comment. And I agree with you. I think you hear it in a lot of different communities, and I don't think the intent is there to be disrespectful or racist by nature. The intent and the actual act is something; those are two separate things. Do you know what I mean?
And I'll say this last thing real quick because I know you guys have other callers to get to. I was a Southside kid, man. I grew up there, and with that being said, I come down here. I joined on with the Dolphins organization, and I moved to a town called Aventura. Aventura is a heavily Jewish population that's here. Their plight, man, and what they went through is very similar in a lot of ways to what we went through, and I've had conversations with good buddies of mine that are here about that and how there's so many similarities. And, the thing about it, man, when it's all said and done, it's just that I look at some of the kids and the difference in regards to the school that my son goes to here opposed to some of the schools that are on the other side of Miami-Dade and what the kids are going through and how they're, you know, they're not provided with as much, you know, to say the least, man. And it's bad. So, you know, I don't condone the looting. I don't condone, you know, stealing, man, or causing harm to anyone else at all whatsoever. But what I do believe is that I think that the rapper Killer Mike made a good comment over the weekend for those who know who he is.
Great.
He said that there needs to be more of review boards for these departments, and they need to be held accountable for the things that they are doing. And I think that if we all, meaning law enforcement, every young man, every young woman that's out there, all of us as a whole begin to temper some of our manners and our ways and how we act, because I get it. The officers have families to get home to at night as well, too. And sometimes, I've got buddies that are in law enforcement, and they say, hey, look, you know, sometimes, you know, I kiss my wife. I don't even know if I'm coming home later on. I don't know if I'm going to make it back home or not, depending on, you know, where they're patrolling at. And it's kind of just like, I get it, but I think we all can do a job. We all can make changes. And if we can all kind of come to the table, maybe this is the time, finally, that we can finally see some change once and for all. I appreciate the floor, and man, you know, man, God bless Chicago and God bless everybody else around the world, man.
Yep. Lance, great stuff.
Thank you, man. We appreciate you.
You're a part of our show. Don't be a stranger.
You know what's interesting too, Sylvie, is like in all walks of life, we raise expectation levels. You know, you see something that's working somewhat, but it needs to work more efficiently, it needs to work better, it needs to work for more people. So you make adjustments. Do you know what I mean? And you set the bar higher. So if you're looking at police officers and you're looking about adjustments that need to be made in terms of protocol, my guess is the really good cops who, as I said earlier, are more disgusted or as disgusted as everyone with the behavior of the bad cops, they're going to meet those higher expectations. So if you implement change in the process of evaluating police officers, the guys that are doing their job, they're going to clear that hurdle.
They're like, cool, yeah, bring it on, right? Yeah.
You know, right, because they're not going to, because they're doing it the right way and they've always done it the right way. So to raise that bar and the expectation level and the system of checks and balances, to me, seems like one that would be a very simple procedure to implement. Because the good guys, regardless of the profession you choose, will always meet the requirements of the raised bar because they're doing their job in the appropriate manner. So it doesn't sound like it should be a really difficult change to implement. You understand what I'm saying?
Of course I do. Yeah, it shouldn't be something. And Abdallah brought that up earlier. Sean's in Maywood. He wants to make a point. Hey, Sean, you're on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, how's it going? Hey, Sylvie, man, I know you're going to beat it, man. I just wanted to say that, man. You're going to beat your little illness.
Appreciate it, Sean. Thanks.
I just wanted to touch on this here. Okay, we've had, like, you know, with the issues of, like, Laquan McDonald, and then we've had issues, you know, just like in Kentucky with Breonna Taylor and all of those issues. And then we've had, like, you know, when we had, like, protests, the protesters is like, okay, yeah, we're out there. We're trying to get the message across. We're doing what we can. And then the next few days is just like, okay, well, what is the legislative laws are going to be after that? And then it just gets like forgotten. So it's now it came to a point now it's at a boiling point now. We're just like one more incident away from this just being like a, I mean, this is bad. We're one incident away from this just being just like total chaos. And I don't want it to get like that. That's the thing. Because where I came from, like I've came from, you know, the west side of Chicago. And, you know, like I've had friends, you know, even with the music, you know. I mean, even, you know, even Ice Cube, he'll tell you, you know, F the police, this is, you know, this, that, and the third and whatnot. And I've kept an open mind to, like, well, okay, yeah, I've had a certain stigma towards them in terms of like how I felt about them. I've had run-ins with them, and I've had even issues where, you know, I would drive, you know, I would be in, you know, like little neighborhoods, and, you know, God forbid, God was with me. I mean, I drove in like you know, I've been in, you know, worse neighborhoods. I was going to see my girlfriend one time, and I've had, you know, I've had lick in the car. They stopped me. And then they looked, and then I was, you know, I kind of channeled myself into my mind and like, okay, well, you know, let me think positive. Like, I don't want the worst to happen. And they're like, okay, well, where you going? I'm like, hey, I'm trying to, you know, trying to find my girl. And, you know, I was totally drunk out of my mind. But it was just like, okay, well, just keep going. Have a nice day. Now, that's to satisfy the argument that there are some cops that, you know, he wasn't looking for me. He was looking for, you know, something that was pretty much major. But with, I want to juxtapose that with this, with the dynamic of what happened last week. That's the boiling point. You know, that is the way you have, like I say, you have the few bad apples that's in a bunch. And, you know, what we want to do, the thing about it, what we want to do, we want to get our message.
Sean, we're losing you, man. You're losing. Did you change your phone or something there?
No. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Now I want to get to the issue, like, with the looters and stuff. I was out driving and I went to go see a friend, and then I just see, like, you know, this is like a bunch of people out, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is, and the thought came to my mind, I'm like, why? Well, I'm like, I'm, you know, my you know, better judgment conscious is better than that. And then I've seen people, what they were taking, it was like they were taking, like, tissue, paper towels, Pampers. These people are, like, oppressed. You know, they're waiting for, like, a second stimulus. There are people that are unemployed. I'm not justifying, you know. Like, I don't want to put a dichotomy out there that, you know, what they're doing versus the reason, the cause of how everything affected this to come to be. But, you know, people were taking, like, I mean, they're people that are hurting. I mean, they really are. I mean, they weren't taking, like, I've seen people, they taking alcohol, potato chips. But I've seen females, they're taking, like, Pampers. And one guy, he's like, hey, you better go get you some. I'm like, nah. I mean, I've grew up in the area and what have you. But I thank my mom, my grandfather, I was raised by older people to have that stronger mind to not do that. And I just want to say this, Sylvie. This the thing about it right here. Your son, you know, Lil Mason, mm-hmm. You know, I just want him to just have, like, a diverse amount of friends. And then it just starts, like, with our kids. You know, we got to pass this down to the next generation.
100%.
We don't want it to have it to where, like, okay, yeah, it's still a plague. I mean, this is still a pandemic, because they're out there protesting in Germany and London. I was looking at the news. So I want this to be, like, with the kids, to just, like, hey, you know, I don't want them to have racial bigotries and, you know, just biases of, you know, their friends, and then just to say, hey, you know, we have biases of the Bears and the Green Bay Packers or the Cubs and the Cardinals. Yeah, that's cool. This is bigger than, you know, like, pretty much like with sports. With this generation, I want this to be, yeah, I want this to be, and this is what King had. I mean, you know, Malcolm X, he was a little bit more militant. But this is the vision of what we would want the next generation to, like, have. That's why Marcus Spears was like, crying. He couldn't explain, like, what was happening, why it was happening. Well, how could he explain it?
Yeah.
You know,
Sean, thank you. We got to run. Look, I appreciate it. I wanted to give you as much time as I can. I appreciate you. Thank you for calling and the well wishes. And I echo what you said about the kids. It's very, very important. All of your calls coming up, 312-332-3776. We do have, don't we? We have to read the Jonathan Taves stuff, don't we, guys, on the looting? The captain weighed in on that. That's coming up next.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right, a lot of people issuing statements on Instagram, on Twitter. If you did not hear Jason Hayward, we're going to play you a sample of that at some point before we leave. The entire interview is available on the ESPN Chicago app. It's the easiest way to get all the shows live, and it's also the easiest way to get all of our podcasts. Meller, you have what Jonathan Toews put up there on Instagram. What did he have to say?
So first off, I'll start by saying that he linked to a video that has gone viral over the last day or two of three black men, mostly two black men of different generations. One man, I believe, is 31. The other is 45. And then there's a third who's 16. And they are arguing about the way to protest, whether peaceful protest is the right approach, whether rioting is the right approach. And it is a very compelling and interesting listen, but there's a lot of swearing, so it's difficult to get the full context without bleeping it. So
you can find it easily.
Yes, it's very easily findable. And so Toews linked to that video, and that's the crux of his message. He says, "A lot of people may claim these riots and acts of destruction are a terrible response. I'll be the first to admit that as a white male, that was also my first reaction. But who am I to tell someone that their pain is not real, especially when it's at a boiling point and impossible to hold in anymore. It's obviously coming from a place of truth. This reaction isn't coming out of thin air. I'm not condoning or approving the looting, but are we really going to sit here and say that peaceful protesting is the only answer? There has been plenty of time for that, and if it was the answer, we would have given it our full attention long ago. Listen to these two men debate. They are lost. They are in pain. They strive for a better future, but as they get older, they realize their efforts may be futile. They don't know the answer of how to solve this problem for the next generation of black women and men. This breaks my heart. I can't pretend for a second that I know what it feels like to walk in a black man's shoes. However, seeing the video of George Floyd's death and the violent reaction across the country moved me to tears. It has pushed me to think how much pain are black people and other minorities really feeling. What have Native American people dealt with in both Canada and the U.S.? What is it really like to grow up in their world? Where am I ignorant about the privileges that I may have had that others don't? Compassion to me is at least trying to feel and understand what someone else is going through. For just a moment, maybe I can try to see the world through their eyes. COVID has been rough, but it has given us the opportunity to be much less preoccupied with our busy lives. We can no longer distract ourselves from the truth of what is going on. My message isn't for black people and what they should be doing going forward. My message is to white people to open our eyes and our hearts. That's the only choice we have. Otherwise, this will continue. Let's choose to fight hate and fear with love and awareness. Ask not what can you do for me, but what can I do for you? Be the one to make the first move. In the end, love conquers all. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. That's from Jonathan Toews on his Instagram.
That's one of the best messages I've heard. I mean, would you guys agree?
Yes. The only thing I would say is just me personally. I guess it falls under the category of I can walk and chew gum at the same time, where I can focus on what happened to George Floyd as being, is, as I said, the most despicable thing that you'll ever see, to seeing that peaceful protest is something that is a cherished part of what we promote, hopefully, in the United States. And being able to differentiate, seeing people who probably have no interest in that peaceful protest, destroying a lifelong accomplishment of a fellow minority in a minority community by destroying their property.
Yeah, it's a really
Or by attacking another individual and causing bodily harm. Like, I just personally, and again, I'm not asking anybody to believe the way I believe. I can differentiate between the two. I don't lump them together. I don't lump together the rioters and the looters with the peaceful protesters. I just, it's painful to watch people standing trying to protect their businesses, something they've spent their entire life trying to develop in a minority community, maybe a minority business owner, and watching 30 years of work go up in smoke, literally, because people are looting their business. That's not a peaceful protest. And I don't know from, again, from my own, sheltered perspective, I don't know how that fully helps the cause.
I think it's a great question for Wilbon, and I want to get to Mark in L.A. Mark, just hold on for me here, but Waddle brought this up. I was watching First Take today, and Stephen A. had somebody on today. This is what I'm most confused about, Waddle. Like, when I say I don't have the answers, I don't know. Like, what you say is the way, at first blush, the way I feel, is, like, my natural reaction is to say the racism has to stop. The killing has to stop. Changes have to make with what happened with George Floyd has to stop. And then I also believe that the looting is wrong. That's my first blush. The guest today on First Take was saying, you guys don't hear us when we peacefully protest. You guys dismiss us when Colin Kaepernick takes a knee. You guys don't change anything when we peacefully protest. So do you hear this now? That's the counterpoint to it that I'm hearing from members in the black community. I don't know what's right, Waddle. And this is where I'm saying that this is a huge issue, which I don't specialize in, which I want to find the right way to think, because I would normally be with you. I'm with you. But I'm wondering if Waddle, if Wilbon would be, if he could explain that in a better way.
Guys, I don't think it's as clear as right and wrong, though. The point is, to you, what you just said, Sylvie, to be heard. And the and they want, they, we want change in what we're seeing on video cameras, you know, way too often. Once is way too often, but it hasn't ended at this point. And we're in 2020. And think about, I said something to my son yesterday. I was trying to explain what was going on in the country. And the first thought he had is, you know, I referenced Martin Luther King and riots in 1968. And he couldn't believe that in 2020, this is still going on today. Same and I stuff. Think a lot of us feel the same way. It's 2020. Things we learned in history class felt like ancient history. But the truth is, it's easy to say that as a white man to realize, oh, no, this stuff happens on a day-to-day basis. And we were, unfortunately, too insulated from the realities that too many black Americans face on a day-to-day life.
All right, let's get to all the calls. Mark in L.A., you'll lead it off. We'll get to as many calls as possible. Then Wilbon coming up at 5.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You have a voice. We want you to use it on ESPN 1000 to tell us what's on your mind with what this country's gone through. You know, over the last week, Waddle's back from vacation. Want to go to Mark in L.A. He's been very patient. Mark, we appreciate it. The floor is yours.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I consider myself one of your older listeners. I'm 71 years old. Sylvie, even though I've lived in L.A. for many years, I grew up in Skokie. I went to Evanston High. I think you went to Niles North. Niles North did not exist when I went to high school.
Wow.
And I feel for you, man. I know you're going to do well. I'm a physician. I have good vibes about you. The medical care now is great. You've got a great attitude. You've got a great family, and I wish you all the best, man.
Thank you.
Really
that means
do.
A lot. I appreciate that.
As far as the COVID, let me say a few more things. You guys have really gotten me through. You and your entire, all your colleagues are just fantastic broadcasters, and you've made it easier for me to get through this quarantine. I listen to you guys every day. You're engaging and intelligent and entertaining, and I love it very much, and I thank you very, very much for everything you've done.
Wow, that means
third,
a lot. Thanks.
Third, I have to shout out to Tom Waddle. Tom, I don't remember a lot of Bear games, but I do remember, and I see this in my mind, I just remember seeing you get smashed one day on the sideline after catching a pass, and I said to myself then, I don't know how this guy does it. And you did it, and my compliments go out to you.
Well, thank you. Hazards of the job.
Boy, you survived it well. Now let's get to the issue at hand. This is very emotional for me. As I say, I'm an older fellow, and I've seen a lot of other protests. And I've been involved in protests back in 1968 against the war. While I was in college, Chicago has a history of race riots. I don't know if you know about the race riot in 1919. I don't know if you know what happened back in 1968 after Dr. King died. this has been going on for a long time. I'm all in favor of people protesting, and I think it's a wonderful thing. My concern is about the violent demonstrators and the looters. And I want to look at this from a sort of the 30,000 foot level. I really think that there are people around the world who are enjoying this disruption in our country. I think there are people, you ask who's organizing these violent demonstrations. I think there are people from around the world who somehow have contacts in this country and initiate a lot of the things that are going on. I think some of the innocent, violent people just see what's going on and just jump right in and take advantage of it. And that's of concern to me, some big concern. It's very bothersome and very worrisome because I think we're talking about democracy and what democracy is all about. We need some moral leadership in this country. And this goes back to what Adam said before, which he said it so beautifully. We need to vote. That's what everybody needs to do now, vote. And I'm talking about you younger folks out there who can't be cynical. And you've got to go out there and vote for the right people. And that's how things are going to change when we have different leaders. And we need moral leadership. And we need somebody to talk to us now. I don't know who's going to talk to us. But we need somebody like an Abe Lincoln or an FDR, somebody to really inspire people in this country. We need that. And this country doesn't have that now. And it's very, very important.
I think it's an interesting point that you mentioned,
Mark,
as well.
Thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you, Mark.
It.
We appreciate it. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Colin Kaepernick tried to protest peacefully. I think some of what Colin was trying to get across was blunted because of certain things. And when Mark talks about voting, I think that turned off a lot of people when they found out that Colin, who was protesting for a truly important cause, didn't vote. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think I agree with Mark when he complimented Adam's point. Look, this is the most important thing you can do. And it's not just at the national level. It's at your local level as well, where there are a lot of instances it's what is most impactful in your immediate life.
Let me take Taylor because he wanted to address that situation. Taylor's been a P1 of the radio station for a while, preset one on your car. Taylor in Hyde Park, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I am angry. I am extremely angry. My household is angry. The fact that the NFL blackballed a black man, for protesting, a peaceful protest, kneeling for the national anthem, which is for his right. I and my household will not support the NFL. They have bullied Colin Kaepernick. They have blackballed Colin Kaepernick. He doesn't have a job, right? They took away his earning power because he is speaking truth to what's happening in our communities. The fact that the NFL is 65 or 70% African-American, the fact that he stood up for what he believed in, what's actually happening in our streets, and you have rich billionaires telling him he can't have a job, the NFL needs to apologize to the black community. They need to apologize to Colin Kaepernick. And I promise you, NFL will never be played on my TV. I won't buy a Bears hat. I won't buy a Bears uniform. I will not. And I mean this, I will not support a league that does not support us, does not support black men, does not support black women, does not support black people. The fact that you have a Rooney rule in place, and this is only the NFL, by the way. The NBA has figured it out. The MLB has figured it out. The fact that you have a Rooney rule in place, and it has to be readjusted again and again and again for black coaches to not get their fair share, is ridiculous. And the fact that this is happening on national television and that Roger Goodell is coming out with a statement, it is a smack in all of our faces. And I tell you this, you make change by spending your dollars. And I am challenging every black person in America, do not, and I repeat, do not spend money where people do not support you. And the fact that the NFL billion-dollar company is sitting here refusing to support a black man who is speaking truth. This is truth. He didn't come out and make some crazy statement. He didn't come out and protest violently. He was taking a knee. And this is crazy to me.
And until the NFL apologizes to black people and Colin Kaepernick, I will not support that. I cannot. I cannot pay for overpriced hot dogs. I cannot pay for overpriced tickets. I cannot pay for overpriced jerseys for the fact that a black man was protesting for his right and for other rights, and this has happened. And now we look back 4 years later and say, you know what? He was right. That's all I got to say. I love you guys. Thank you so much. I know you have a lot of listeners. So allow me to get what I have to get off my chest. But I just can't support the NFL. I'm sorry.
Yep, Taylor, that's why we're here, to give you a voice.
Right.
Thank you. Michael Wilbon will join us. He's been very against a lot of the things happening in the NFL. Some important questions and important conversation with Michael Wilbon in 2 minutes.